Scoremaster podcast. This is episode 7 with Paul and Barry.
Hello, and our episode title is New Player Guide.
Yeah, so today we'll be talking through what to do if you want to start playing, where to look for resources, how to do it on the cheap. That's always good, to start playing a game for cheap.
Mm-hmm. Basically, we decided to do this as an episode today because we just played a game and we've got a lot of new players like buzzing around the scene at the moment, and this is something that's been requested for us. So we're going to go through how you would get into this awesome game.
First up, Paul, what have you been doing this week?
This week, wargaming-wise.
Well, specifically Warmaster, but...
Oh, Warmaster, okay, Wargaming in general. Warmaster. It's been pretty new recently. We just played a game there of Nippon versus Empire, which was, you know, really, it was a really good one. It went the distance to 8 turns, and you were down to 5 minutes left.
There wasn't much left.
But that, you know, like, it was like a game that, like, turns wise, we played games that have been 4 turns, and this one was 8, and we still managed to get it in time. But you did have to, like, actually very War Machine style at the end, prioritise what to do at the end to, like, where your time's going to be thought about.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a good game.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll talk
about briefly.
That. But briefly. So I've been making a lot of scenery, actually. I've found a couple of companies that make Warmaster 10mm scale scenery. Sally Forth and Supreme Littleness Miniatures. Supreme Design Miniatures. And they make some lovely stuff. And I've picked up some very, like, £5 scenery,
price.
Which is laser cut wood, MDF, and you then just stick it together, and it looks great. So I've just been dabbling with that. I have a Skaven army, arriving soon. So I'm going to be like busting the scene with my Skaven army because I'm a Skaven player, and this will be this my kind of army to fun to use. It'll be massive with a huge breakpoint. And what else? And then outside of Warmaster, I'm playing in a Harlow War Machine tournament recently, so I've been practicing for that. And tonight at the club, I'm playing Net Epic against Shape, which will be a hell of a lot of fun. But the table will look lovely because I finished that as well. Because luckily, I'm using a lot of the same scenery for this game.
Okay, right. What have I been doing? I played in the Kings of War League, which is quite interesting. It's very basic, though, Kings of War. I try to get enthused, but it's basically you just run forward at each other and smash in the middle. So,
yay!
I'm enjoying it as much as I can say that you could ever enjoy that kind of game. We went at Podcaster Party. We had Podcast Party.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So we had 17 people for that.
Yeah, we had basically we hit a milestone of 100 subscribers. That isn't downloads. That's people who actually...
We're now up to 150.
Oh, my God! You know, so that's amazing. I mean, when we started this, we had no set agenda of, like, what was good or bad, but I did not expect 100.
No.
I wouldn't have expected 100 ever.
And I promise not to go on about it anymore now. We're going to leave it. There's 150.
We'll set another milestone, but we went out for a curry, and everyone we mutually know came along.
Yeah, it's good fun. And so I've been doing that, and I've also been putting together the start of my Nippon army, so... sorting out, I've just basically put one model on each base so I know what it is, and then I'll gradually work towards getting it ready and then getting it painted, because I'm not a great painter, and it's getting worse. The older I get, my eyesight starts going...
Will you commission paint this one? Like, will you give it to Rid to paint?
Because, I'm in my mid to late 40s now, and I'm having to wear glasses to paint, and it just... Yeah, I couldn't even be bothered painting when I didn't have to wear glasses, so...
Fair enough.
Okay, so that's what
I like painting.
Okay, I like playing. Painting's a secondary. So we've got a competition running. So our Facebook page, I've actually discovered now that you don't need to comment. It's nice of you to comment, for sure. But if you just like the competition post,
good.
That's enough. It will provide a list of all the people that have liked, and that will be enough for me to award the prize. And we'll be running that until the close of, until midnight on Wednesday the 3rd of February. And then we'll close it down and do some videoed random draw.
Awesome.
Somehow. Okay, right.
Can it be like the National Lottery?
Yeah, I'll get Dale Winton to do it. Fantastic. So today's match four. Come on, tell him about it.
Okay, so Barry's using the new hotness, which is Nippon, which are the Japanese faction of the Warhammer world, Old Hammer world. I used Empire because I'd like to get better. Get better with an Empire list.
It was a much better list.
Yeah,
And there was no steam tank. I think that helped a lot.
There was no steam tank.
That helped a lot.
But we had it was a really good game because Nippon. On their thing is the breakpoint is only the samurai. Barry held the samurai back, so I was
in the whole game. I'll let you know, I lost no samurai,
but
it came close. Yeah, and I would have lost the game going long. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, the end result was you can't really say on a breakpoint score because Nippon, like Bretonians, change it. But I'd have gotten full VPs for casualties done because I'd done a hell of a lot.
Oh, there's nothing left. I had nothing left but samurai and my unit.
So basically, I used my cannons dominated because though Nippon have these great things, they also have some serious weaknesses, which we found with like no unit of flyers, no real good range game, only ranges they have with their troops they care about.
Yep.
So and
cavalry.
No magic. Yeah.
The cavalry are things they care about, so they can't expend them.
Exactly. So my cannons, my two units of Empire cannons, were just sitting on a nice hill, just blasting deleting a unit a turn of like expendable, like whatever they were.
Ashgari or Ronin.
So that was really good, and we had this stage of the game. So after we'd like had about, I think, turn five or turn six, we basically both reformed our armies to like go at each other again, which was quite
true. You made yourself back into brigades and I just pulled my two sets of samurais together, samurai and foot, samurai.
I mean, basically Nippon are a very good army, but they're not unbeatable. Like they're going to have some very bad matchups. Like I think dwarves will be like, and Bretonians.
Interesting.
So anyway, it's encouraging.
The one unit that would probably need capping is Ronin, because they are so good. I don't know what you'd cap them, but it may be 4 per 1,000, which is probably the physical limit on the list anyway.
The thing that's too strong. As I say, because the reason we're interested is because Nippon won our first event. Are they too good an army? And we're playing a game there, and I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think the only thing, as I say, they do need is probably a cap on the Ronin, but that cap would be a realist, an honest cap there rather than a harsh one.
Yeah, so if the cap was 4, you couldn't really run more than 8 units anyway. Because, you literally can't. Yeah. Otherwise, you've got to have a break point of your samurai of less than 4, and that really is taking liberties. Because if you get,
it was good because to play, you've got to know, you can't just look at paper and say this thing's too good or this thing's too good, bad. You've got to play a game and more than one game.
Yeah.
So,
and you've got to try and build a list.
Exactly.
Stuff on paper looks bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, especially things on the Wood Elf list. But I think when you actually try and put that on a table, it might not be as good as it looks.
This isn't a game where you can theory hammer it too much. You've got to actually put it on the table and see what happens.
Like, the funny you say about that, because Sherwin was getting all excited about that he had access to orcs. But, the orcs have no armour in this.
Mm-hmm. He's talking about Chaos Dwarves. He wants to run a Chaos... Because Sherwin...
Because stuff that looks cheap looks enticing, but it's not really that good in this game.
No.
Cheap stuff is cheap for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't do anything, it just dies.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so anyway, I won the match. It went right down to the wire, turn 8. I had to make some ludicrous rolls to get my stuff in.
I mean, it's not often that I blame, like, dice and luck, but I was having some shocking dice with my pistoliers. It was just like, they weren't hitting anything, they weren't passing any armour saves, and it was against samurai cavalry, so I just, anything would matter.
Yeah.
Like, even stands, that's good, that dictates later, and I just couldn't get anything out of them, which was annoying, but I'm glad I managed to make it go down to the wire. And in fact, Barry's time clock was about to go. I don't think you could have played another time.
No, so it was interesting. I actually because of the way the game went, and I lost all my chaff, like literally all of it, so I only had samurais left, and I was I had less clock left than you.
I finished with 25 minutes.
Yeah, so that meant that I couldn't. There's no draw in this system, so I had to go on the offensive, otherwise I was going to lose.
You're going to lose,
Meant now that his cannons, each turn, instead of taking away chaff, were potentially taking away a samurai.
And the thing is, because the cannons are outdistancing anything Nippon has quite a way, I can just sit there and blast
surrounded
away. And like my turns can be very quick because I'm like, everybody's in position,
shoot,
fire.
It's very cinematic. You see the Japanese samurai charging towards the cannons and getting blown to pieces.
You ever seen The Last Samurai? That's how it was.
But luckily I made like literally ridiculous rolls, like broken brigades. I was rolling like 3s and 2s to get them into combat, and then we managed to get exactly what we needed. Literally with the last dice roll.
There was nothing else. Like, you got my breakpoint of 11 with the last attacks you could make, and it was there was no other wave coming in.
No,
because by this point I'd banged up the samurai enough to make them get into be combat ineffective. Like the flank of samurai cavalry, though I hadn't killed a unit, I'd damaged 3 of them.
Literally, even though I didn't lose any samurai, they were all murdered. There was hardly anything left combat wise. So it was a really close game, and it was a good game.
Yes, indeed.
Right, so today we're going to be talking about
Our new player guide. So we have a bullet pointed list here of what to go through, where we'll just go through in detail a bit about how you would get into this.
And also, there will be a lot of web addresses, so I'm not going to read out the /.. Yeah. So I'll just provide it on the Facebook page, Warmaster Podcast Facebook page. I'll provide a link to all the different places you need to go to get your rules and to get all the other bits and pieces you need to get played. Okay, so, right. Where do we find the rule books and army lists?
Well,
the most important bit, apart from asking you to provide them, Paul, and go to Staples.
Okay, so you can get them off the War Munster website, isn't it? War Munster website, has the copy of the core rules there, and it has the erratas that were put in as well. It's all there.
It's good, War Munster. Yeah. You can also go to Rick's War Munster pages, and you can get the rule books there. Yep. And the army list, and there are orators.
Yeah, so that's where you can get the rules.
Also one more place that I get them from. If you go to the War Master Army Selector, which is what I use to build my list.
Yep, which is up to date.
It's very good. You'll see there's a little kind of PDF symbol in the corner, and that's the PDFs of the rule books and army list. So you can get them from there.
So that's where you can get the rules. You can get them from those three places for free. And then it's just a matter of printing them out, whatever, however you want a copy of them.
Well, you can have them on your tablet,
Tablet. Now, I say the rule set that we are using takes all the erratas and puts it into one document. So basically, one hardbound document. That's what we're using.
Yeah, so this like homebrew rule set doesn't have any pictures in. It's like really, it's just print.
It's just the rules, and it's like what it's done is it's indexed them in a logical way.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The only change we've made is a couple of Saffron Walden errated house rules, which make the game play better, basically. And we'll go through them.
Yeah, we will. They've been put straight in the rule book. Okay, we've got them later.
So basically, our scene of Saffron Walden and Chelmsford is using, the rules of Warmaster with these following add-ons stuck into it. Support, basically.
So we're going to go through these steps.
Now. Why not? Support is that you count support moving casualties. I mean, it's obviously, there's more detail than that for each one, but I'm just bullet pointing them for you.
I'm not going to do it in detail.
Okay, if a combat is won, units not in contact with the enemy but withstands in support of the combat can either stand their ground or fall back. However, they cannot go forward of an imaginary line drawn across the main line of combat. They're also eligible to reform at the end of the combat phase. So what this means is if you have a unit of, say you have a unit of infantry fighting in line and a unit of infantry behind in line supporting them, they actually get to do something after the combat. They can't go forward with the combat, they can't continue to move.
So when you pursue, you leave your support behind.
Which is exactly right.
Which tips the math massively.
Exactly, which means that you'll have a decisive combat, but you'll outstrip your support. They can't do anything in the core rules. So your support is just left standing there, looking silly. At least you can tactically move them back somewhere, which is what this rule does.
But it also means that defensively, as long as you can take that first battering, you can keep your support and they lose their support, so that the mass changes quite a bit.
Flanks, to hit a unit in the flank, the bulk of the charging unit must be inside a 45 degree arc of the side of the unit. This applies even if only part of the target unit can see the flank. Pretty obvious, like good rule, but just something that was never in the rule book in the first place. So dictate that puts in paper where a unit's flank is.
Okay, good, because another little thing that goes around that is sometimes people get confused with shooting. Mm-hmm. So when you're charged, even though you've got a 180 degree line of sight, if you're charged in the flank, you don't get to shoot. No, it will be in your line of sight because you're coming. It will come from your front sometimes, but it's in the flank, so you don't get to shoot.
Fight to front. Stands must fight directly to their front if possible, engaging the stand in which they have the longest edge-to-edge contact. If two enemy stands are of equal contact length, they may choose which one to engage. Corner-to-corner engagement only occur when there's no other alternative. So what this means is the dice is very simple because there's no decisions, agonising decisions where you direct to take your attack.
I think this changed the game the most for me because you'd have like Dwarf Warrior, Rangers, Dwarf Warrior in column, and I'd always
pick all the Rangers,
and now you can't.
No, you can't do that. I mean, but it means the game plays a lot quicker because it's like the only choices you're going to make normally is where your character throws his dice if the character's joined a combat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure in the because the rule books are kind of messy. I'm not sure. Could you put your dice anywhere until this?
Yes.
Could you even in the back?
Yes.
Yeah, because what it does allow is like if you get charged in the rear by some chaff.
Yeah.
and there's some hard stuff to the front. You can't fight the chaff in the back.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's a very good rule, basically. It's a very good addition. I mean, all of this stuff has come from years of playtesting in Saffron Walden. It's not come up overnight.
Okay, so next one's fallback.
Fallback. In the event of a drawn combat, fallback moves are made only sideways or backwards, i.e. a unit cannot go forward of an imaginary line across the main line of contact they had with the event enemy. Very sensible, because in the core rules, you could move forward off a draw. Yeah, which
doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense at all.
So we do the dice off, say you lose, move backwards, I move into your flank, then the initiative charges.
Exactly.
So it's silly.
Which was bad. And this doesn't allow that. Yeah. You know, because it's meant to be, as you haven't won the combat, you can't go forward, you've got to go back.
Or sideways, yeah, fine.
So, terrain. If a unit is on or inside difficult terrain, but one or more stands are partly outside, then those stands still count as defended, 5+ to hit, but the attacking stands don't lose their charge bonus. Broken ground, such as cultivated fields, count as open, but attackers do not gain their charge bonuses. So, just a little additional to terrain, because in practice, terrain is area terrain normally, and you often have a stand hanging out half in, half out of it, because it physically has to, and this just defines what benefits they get.
Okay. Now, then, before you do scouting, this took me a long time to get my head round.
It's not complicated.
Well, there's a lot of words. So, what I will say, I'll just put this into perspective before we start. What happens is we allocate a certain portion of our army, and that's a fixed amount, doesn't change game to game, and that is your scouts.
Yeah. So,
don't talk about the values yet.
The setup rules in the book are I put a unit down, you put a unit down. That takes forever and is unnecessary.
And especially using Death Clock, it's swapping.
In an organised play event, that is not a good way to set up, because it takes too long, it doesn't really change much. You're going to have someone agonise over silly decisions, because you are a long way away from each other at the start of a game.
So basically
this scouting rule is a lot speedier way to set up, and when you put yourself on the clock as well, you set up quickly, because you don't want to lose the clock time doing it.
So when you first come across this, It seems a bit bonkers, but it works. Really should give it a go. I think some people who have been talking, we've been talking about playing a game in 98 minutes.
Yeah.
If you're doing old school deployment,
you'd never get that.
No chance. You could spend 30 minutes doing deployment,
which is silly. Anyway, so I'll go over what it does. Scouting. To represent the pre-battle struggle for information between opposing army scouts and their commanders carrying out personal reconnaissance, an army's scouting points are calculated as follows. Factions are rounded up. So, the role, scouting points and troop types. Flyers, 3 points. Any flying unit of any flying character or a character on a flying mount, and Waywatchers as well, because they're particularly good at scouts. They were 3 points each. Scouts are worth, so the category, scouts, worth 2 points. Any unit of cavalry with 0 or 6 armour, or rangers, gutter runners, ethereal hosts, dryads, centaurs, yetis, non-flying command 10 characters, worth 2 points.
Okay.
Patrols, 1 point. Any unit of cavalry with a 5+ armour, a glade guard also, and non-flying command 9 characters. Pickets, 0.5 each. Any unit of shooting infantry with 0 or 6 armour and non-flying command 8 characters. So, basically, in your army list, you decide which of your units can get scouting value and which you're going to put forward to be scouts.
And then that figure's fixed.
Yep, and then I'll read through. So, players first decide which units and characters they wish to commit to scouting. Each player then rolls 2 dice and adds this to their number of committed scouting points. The player with a higher total places their command scouting units and or characters within the deployment zone. Units which are allowed to infiltrate or ambush do not need to be placed at this stage, but they still help. Next, the player with a lower roll must place all their units and characters within their normal deployment zone. Finally, the player who won the scouting roll then places the remainder of their units on their deployment zone. Also, additionally, the person that won the scouting roll decides which table side they want. The way in practice it works is, say my scouting value is hypothetically 6 and Barry's was 8. I roll 2 dice and add 6. I've rolled a 12, so I've scored 18. Barry rolls 2 dice and adds his scouting value of 8. He rolls a double 1 and gets a total of 10. Naturally, I'm better than Barry. So I've won the scouting roll. I decide which table side I want, and I put down what I committed as scouts set up first.
Everything. Characters.
Yeah.
Everything
so
you committed.
Anything I committed. So say it was Empire. Let's say I did 2 units of pistoliers, which are worth their scouts because they're... Sorry, they're...
They're scouts?
They're patrols. They're 1 point because they're a unit cavalry of 5+ armor save. 1, 2, and then my flying character is 3, 4, 5. Okay. So, okay, my value, like, just hypothetically, my value there was 5.
Okay, and my Holly Elves, for example, I have 2 units of Eagles and 1 character on a dragon.
3, 6, 9.
9, and then the Reavers, 3 units of those are worth 6.
2 points each.
So that's 15.
Yeah, so you...
So that's why I run it.
Yeah, so 15. In our example then, I won the scouting role. I set up my scouts on the clock. I switch the clock over when I'm done. Barry sets up his entire army on his clock.
Yeah.
When he's done, he flips it back to me. I set up the rest of my army. We then roll off the first turn and we crack on with the game. So by winning the scouting roll, you don't get the first turn necessarily. It's a dice off.
Yeah, and you don't need to commit anything to scouts.
No.
Like, my Nippon army has 0.
Just because something can doesn't mean you have to. And sometimes maybe you just don't want to.
Yeah. You know, so I just roll my 2 dice and that's my scouting value.
What it does is it speeds up what was a very clunky way of setting up the game. By going out of the original core rule book. Anyway, so that's the in total of the Saffron Ruler errata that we use. So just to recap, support, flanks, fight to front, full back, terrain, scouting. That's
okay.
It. So it's one page of A4, which we've put in the back of our rules here, which is just the way, if you're going to play in our tournaments...
You want to play a decent game.
Yeah.
Using time turns, time games.
The biggest thing, the biggest thing is the dice fighting to the front.
Yeah.
The flanking, where a flank is, and the scouting. But the
I think everything makes a difference.
I think it's like the fighting to the front is clearly the biggest game thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all basically.
It's all good.
The people who created this have played more War Master than you. They know what they're talking about.
Okay, so we'll post that document on the Facebook page.
Yep.
I can't think of anywhere better to put it.
Yep.
So, next question was, where do we find stuff to make token armies?
Where do we find?
I'd go to the Warmaster site is where I'd go. Unless you want ogres, and then you really have your work cut out. There is a token army for ogres.
There isn't a token one for Chaos Dwarves.
I'm sure there's not.
I was tempted to bring Chaos Dwarves.
Okay.
But you could create it from using dwarves, I suppose.
And orcs and other bits.
Yeah.
But one thing I would mention with the token armies is they are great, and we'll talk about how to make them again in a second, but they're not always accurate.
No,
rules have changed, the stats have changed.
I think they've been done like 10 years ago, and the rules on them you can't take as given because some are wrong.
Yeah. Like the Hydra was wrong.
They work fantastic for a cost nothing way to play the game.
Yeah. So if you were looking for the ogres, I think it's Brumbars or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to spell that, but mm-hmm. Search it. Ogre tokens. Mm-hmm. So right, how would you produce them? So you get your tokens offline off War Muster. You download them, print them in colour, A4.
A4, 2-3 pages. You
laminate them.
You might need 2 copies of 1 page.
Yep, laminate them. Then get some cheap vinyl floor tile, which is self-adhesive from a pound shop. Stick the laminate to the floor tile and then cut them out with scissors.
You don't have to laminate the tokens. You can do, but it's a little thing.
It looks nice.
Yeah.
It's resilient. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Literally 20 minutes, maybe push a couple of quid.
From concept to table ready... I've done that in 20 minutes. Yeah, because I was like, how long does it... So I have an idea, like Vampire Counts, when I wanted to play with Vampire Counts.
Ooh, yeah.
I watched this movie, I fancy, playing Vampire Counts, and from design to print to ready, 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Can't argue. 20 minutes. The hardest thing is cutting the bloody things. So if you pick up the tiles,
a good pair of scissors.
Because I need some hand strength. Right, so where do you build this? You used to use Army Builder.
I was just wrong. Don't use that.
I used to have Army Builder, but he's making money off the back of other people's
work.
It's
a shame that it's wrong, because it's a very nice computer program, but, it's not.
Well, if you wanted to, you could update it.
Yeah.
The data file.
I ain't got that much time. I ain't got time for that.
So I would suggest go to War Master Army Selector. It's fantastic. You can get the PDFs of the rules and stuff from there. I build all my lists on there.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not costing the guy who runs it too much money for all the bandwidth I eat. Because I'm on it like several times each day building lists.
Oh, are you? Yeah, right.
On the toilet, building lists. Because like you say, you look at a list in the army list and you say, oh, that list looks completely brilliant. And then you try and build a list and go, oh, this is...
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. For a free computer program, it's fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah. So we've talked about the Triwizard rules. Right, how to play the game. Time games. Deployment. We've talked about time games. We've talked about deployment.
Yep.
Types of terrain.
Okay, so War Master works best with area terrain. because then it's really clearly defined. So you probably want some units of woods in there, and basically there's open ground, there's defended ground, and there's fortified ground. So if you have a nice table, would have something of everything. Obviously, it's going to have open ground because that's the table. Defended ground is like woods and hills, so we should have some of that.
Yeah.
And then fortified, if you can fit it in, not too much fortified.
No,
though,
it's a nightmare.
Because fortified is really good, and if you have too much, I mean, like I'm tempted. My birthday's coming up soon. I'll be 33 in Valentine's Day, and
you can't write this stuff. Your birthday is Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's Day. I'm not making that up. I'm a love child.
You can't write. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, this scenery that I've picked up recently, they do complete castles for like £50, and these are big castles.
What are you going to do with it?
I don't know.
Looks like Helm's Deep.
I don't know. But they, one of them's fantastic because they've even done castle wall sections that have been breached. So in a siege game, when you breach the scenery, you replace the wall with the breached one.
Maybe that's Christmas next year.
I don't know.
To play Warhammer World.
But anyway, if I did get this thing, you couldn't put it in the middle of the table because it's ridiculous. You'd have to have it just looking very pretty in a corner, really, I think. I don't know.
Well, it depends who's inside it. If it's dwarves.
Or if you made it that you could go inside it, I suppose. But like, But you can do, I mean, we're playing with scenery that Barry's just cut some bits of wood.
Yeah,
you know,
I
got the smallest scale of tree you can get from a model hot railway shop.
Yeah.
And they were like 15p a tree or something. And I put them on pennies, and there's our trees.
It looks good. It looks good. The game looks good. You need scenery, though.
You do. I mean, some armies are the armies they are because they're good with scenery or not good with scenery. If you're playing Bretonians, for example, you have to have a lot of cavalry. Cavalry can't go inwards and like ruins and stuff. So that's not fair if they have a table with no scenery on it. But equally, it's not fair if they have a table with too much scenery on it.
Yeah.
So there is no. The problem is there is no guidance for how much scenery you should have on a table. Now,
we'll probably play with about 6 to 8 pieces.
Yeah, 6 to 8 pieces. And it doesn't seem over cluttered. Because in the game's centimetres, and there's a lot of space on the table, there's a lot of real estate on the table. The game's, you know, unlike old Hammer games, the units are really quite flexible on how they move. So you can find defensive positions.
Yeah, you can squeeze over bridges and
exactly,
stuff.
And like, and it's all great stuff. Because the problem with Old Hammer is that Kings of War is that your unit sets up opposite another unit, they're going to fight.
They just run into each other
because they can't move really that well. Yeah, but in Warmaster that isn't the case. Anyway, so scenery wise is you want quite a bit dotted around, but ultimately it's got to be practical. And so these bits of wood, like making hills and other ones making woods, is fantastic. Then obviously you can always make areas of impassable terrain, which could be anything. We used like this Wizard's Tower, which this company had done for £5, and it looks like Isengard, and it's like a lovely little bit of scenery. It's to scale, and we just make that impassable.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, so one of the things I would talk about is like leadership and how that affects the game. Because it's not that if you come into this game new, you're a new player.
Yeah,
leadership doesn't work like any other game.
How is it different from other war games then? I guess this is going on to the question like, why would you play Warmaster?
Okay.
So
Why Warmaster?
Okay, so this game, and as I've said before, is about the player's ability to command an army, not about a very good character that's very difficult to kill or very strong.
Yeah.
So your characters have a command value, and that dictates how your army goes, basically. When you pass these command rolls, your army does something, and you are doing things. If they fail the command rolls, your army does nothing. Yeah, because of the fog of war confusion, it just doesn't react.
Yeah, but when you come from another game...
Oh, that's how it's different.
Yeah, because like, normally you just say, you go there and shoot those, and they do it, and you go there and charge those, and they do it.
There is, like, there's very few game systems I know out there where your troops won't just work. You actually have to get them to work. Like, in Warmaster, they won't do anything if you don't pass the dice rolls.
Yeah, yeah, and part of the game is preventing the other people doing stuff.
Yeah.
Put stuff near them,
yeah.
Take one of the stands off the unit, and then things start...
That's less. Or use a unit of trolls.
Use a unit of trolls, they won't do anything.
Yeah, so that's to me, that is the best thing, or one of the best things about the game, is that, like, I think I might have gone on on podcast here before and say this. Old Hammer, you could build that unkillable character. You could build a demon prince of Dzinch with a three-up rerollable ward save. And it's ridiculous. The guy can't die. Like, you know, it's silly. And it's like, and because he's unbreakable as well, it really doesn't matter what you do with him. Because you can just send him over there and he can, like, catch cannonballs in his teeth and he'll be fine if you make the dice. And you should make the dice. So that's no fun. You know, like, this game doesn't have that. War Master characters look suitably epic, like
the
High Elf Dragon, for example, is huge. He's like Smaug size.
Yeah.
You know, like, but he does nothing on his own.
No, and that's that dragon's a tenth of your army.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all he does is bring some extra dice to a combat. And
exactly.
Terror, and that's it.
You know, which is a good thing, because it's one of the few things in the game that you can choose where the dice go. But it's not grain breaking. It's not. It doesn't create an imbalanced system. And that's what is really good about this game, is that it's a proper ranks and flanks game. In fact, it's the best ranks and flanks game there is out there. I do not know of one that is better.
Well, certainly not Kings of War.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it has a few problems, of course. Like, you know, it's not perfect, but it is the best game system that for ranks and flanks that I know. And I even War Master Ancients, which took the game rules, came afterwards, War Master, and took the rules and put them into Legions of Rome and Anglo-Saxons or whatever, that played a bit with the rules as well, and apparently that can play just as well, but it's a different side.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not got the fantasy element of it. So why would you play War Master? Is it, if you know the fluff of Warhammer, or liked it, because it's been around 30 years.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Until they killed it recently.
Not anymore.
But, like, this is the game. This is, the armies play exactly like the armies should play. Skaven are loads of them, and they're all rubbish. And they're going to come at you with a horde.
Yeah.
High Elves, nice, dainty little army, look very pretty, but they are very good at what they do.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're elite.
It's good for the fluff,
yeah.
And it's cheap to play.
Yes,
like, literally,
I mean, we're talking
play for nothing.
Yeah, this tokens way is playing for nothing. Now, obviously, you'd want to use miniatures, but then
after you've played for a little while,
yeah,
and know what you want to buy,
don't
go out and buy
for
the sake of buying
it. No, play your games with tokens first. Decide what you need. Because there are no rules, as in, like, there's nothing saying that a unit, a stand of whatever, has to have X amount of models on it. Not at all.
No, I mean, I played with one model on each, but that was a bit. That's not the way they're going to be. That's just the way I did it for today. But I wouldn't.
Yeah,
but
you wouldn't.
Even though I'm not that cheap.
Yeah. But, like, obviously, armies are the aesthetically what you want them to be. You know, there is no dictate. Like, for example, the typical GW unit was six strips of models that went two strips on a base.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say that you couldn't have one strip on a base and have twice the unit, two units.
No.
It wouldn't. Really. I mean, there's nothing that says that you don't have to.
So, movement. We'll talk a little bit about how movement works, because it's not the same as most of the game systems you've played. There's no wheeling.
No. The scale's too far back out. Like, if you've watched some movies, I'm trying to think of one at the moment. Alexander, the one that Colin Farrell did when he was Alexander. They had a scene where, like, eagles flying over the battlefield, and you see the whole battlefield, and, like, units moving around, and the Greek pikemen forming up in squares to poke people. That's War Master.
Right.
That's what you're looking at on the table.
Okay. So, like, basically, what I suggest you do is pick the stand that's going to move the furthest.
Yeah.
And then measure from that stand. So measure from the front, measure your 20 centimetres, for example,
yep,
and then just form up around that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then
you're moving the one that's going the furthest distance, so the others naturally can form around them because they've got shorter distances to go.
Yeah, and they can fit, as long as there's a 20 mil gap for them to get through, they can all get through.
Yeah. So there's like...
So they can move one at a time,
there's
one stand at a time.
Limitless reforms, turnings as you do the unit. Because again, the scale's too far out. Like, you know, what it truly represents. But it represents, like, a full infantry move is a long way. Like, is in terms of...
It feels a long way.
It feels
20 centimetres is a long way.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I try it out. But it's not like, oh, they've moved 100 metres. They've moved probably a mile or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, 6 inches in was the movement in fantasy. That felt like a small amount.
Yeah.
Compared to the figure, but 20 centimetres compared to the size of the figure.
Some people 6 inches are bigger than others, Barry.
It feels a long way. Brilliant. Shooting and magic.
Yes, okay.
Just touch on what they do and what they're there
for. So the game is... the shooting and magic tends to disrupt units rather than destroy them.
So it's not like fantasy where you can just...
No, you
turn
can't.
Turn one.
No, you
purple sun or whatever it was, and seat the whole army.
So, I mean, that's again a problem of Old Hammer, was that you'd go to all this effort to go to an event, you'd get your army together, you'd paint them up, blah, blah, blah. You'd play dwarves, and this happened to me. And then somebody just six dice is purple sun into your army, and it just kills you. And it's like, what was the point? You know, like, you know, it's like, because it's a tactic in the game. It's just, there's no skill to that. And it's just, there you go.
Wait, mean, to roll like, six dice, get a double. Or a double six.
Yeah, irresistible. And it's like, in it goes. Oh, I failed my initiative test because I'm dead. Like, and it's like, my dwarf didn't have a good initiative. And it's like, and it was just like, what, you know, not good.
Not good at all.
Not worth your time, basically. And when time, like myself, like when time is limited, like, not worth it.
So imagine coming from that mindset and coming here. Mm. Magic does nothing. Literally nothing. How many spells did you get off that game?
Two, maybe.
One with the hex. I saw the hex. Maybe two. And that was over eight turns with two wizards.
Yeah. Because the thing is, because the game is not complicated, doesn't mean it's not good. It's not tactical. In fact, it probably only enhances it. Like, magic is literally, you've got four spells normally in your army list, and say it's a five up to cast, it's one dice trying to get a five plus. That's it.
That's it.
That's as complicated.
And then you can dispel it.
And some armies can dispel, dwarves can, but normally armies can't. And that's it. You either did it or you didn't. And the spells themselves are not game breaking. Normally, the best ones are normally like a movement spell where you get to move a unit again, which can be really good.
Or chaos, where they give you loads of extra attacks. They tend to be like double-edged swords. Yeah, if they go wrong, they'll hurt you.
Rage of Chaos or something? The Chaos have a spell which you can get, like, throw a lot of extra dice, but any... To calculate how many dice
if you roll a double,
you hit yourself, and it's like it's only really like you would only cast it and do the one dice worth. Aside from the only time you wouldn't is if you sent in a unit of you planned on it and you sent in a unit of Chaos Hounds, which are going to die because they like three hits and no armor save, and you're like, I might as well smash this spell into them, roll the maximum dice, hope I don't roll any doubles, and then get an outrageous amount of attacks for an expendable unit. That's the only time you would do it.
It's good fun, though.
Yeah.
When it goes off, it's good fun.
Yeah.
When the Albion raise their fenders for free.
Yeah, it's like, damn it. That monster's free.
But you've got to roll a six.
I think probably the best spell in the game is Raise Dead, I think.
Or Raise Fen Beast.
But Raise Dead's not capped. Fen Beast is.
Well, you can have two.
Well, one per wizard.
Two.
Yeah. the undead, both Vampire Counts and Tomb King variety, naturally have a Raise Dead spell, and that is bonkers good.
It is. You know, like, you get them all.
It's like, because that is good attack, defense, in every way that is good. And you can use it so well to like win combats you shouldn't win. That's the best spell in the game.
Right, in your opinion. Mm-hmm. Right, so winning the game. Winning the game's different to most of the games.
And
that there are two ways to win.
We've created a third, but like with the clocks, you know, if you run out of time. But the game, you lose the game by your general dying, which never happens.
I've never had it happen.
No, it's come close, but I've never seen it happen. Or you break the army, which is basically you add up all the units. When half of them are dead, rounding up, the game ends immediately.
At that point, during that combat, that's it, gone.
Yeah, done.
Don't bother rolling any more dice.
No, it's done.
Okay, so that's it. That's as simple as that. And the third method is you run out of time.
Yeah.
Right, so we've got questions from punters. People on the... They weren't from the Facebook page.
Are we going to go for names, or are we just going to list the questions? Or should we just say...
If you could remember the names. I didn't see the questions. So.
Oh, okay, yeah, we'll read out the questions.
Right, I'll ask the questions.
Yep.
How much does it cost to start, Paul?
That was from Aaron, I think. So varied, doesn't it? I mean, because as I said, like, the models you use is completely up to you and how many...
So how much would it cost if I went out and got a Skaven army from eBay?
That was GW models. Original. Oh, my God.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So a lot.
Now,
how much if I go and get Skaven tokens?
Nothing. You know, like, so it will cost as much as you want it to cost. So, you're better off doing a Skaven army, unless you know something, some other way to get hold of them, your Skaven army is probably going to be...
Or you could do Calistra or something.
Yeah, Malistrum, isn't it? Oh. To get... They do Ratmen, and you'd use them as a Skaven model.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you know another.
So it costs as much as you want to spend.
Yes,
which basically. Is nice. It's not like you have to go and buy a £100 army box, and that's only half an army.
I would say something about how much it costs is like in a Warmaster army. Obviously, we play the game at 2,000 points, which is the way the game is meant to be played. It scales up very nicely. You can play bigger games at not much more time, and doesn't really scale down that well. 1,000 points. You might as well play
1,500 maybe.
Yeah, but it's about the smallest, isn't it? Yeah. You wouldn't want to play smaller; it wouldn't work because they're not an army. But with getting new stuff for it, you basically created the army. You've got the army together. Like I'm playing a bit of Net Epic at the moment, and you get little detachments of stuff, and so you might expand the army by getting a few more detachments choice. Warmaster doesn't really have that. It's like you've created the army and that is it then. Once you've got it, there's nothing else to get.
Mm-hmm. Right, so tournament scene. Somebody's asked about a tournament scene. Good luck with this.
Well, no.
If you're outside the east of England, let's say, good luck
with
this.
Well, we know of our tournament scene, which we've created. Outside of that, I'm not sure.
I did hear about one in Germany.
Yeah, there's stuff in Europe, but
there was only one I heard about in Germany.
It's not many. So the onus is there is to create one.
Yeah, there's not one near you.
Speaking of that, there was a clerk on the Warmaster Facebook group recently. A guy put up a post saying we're playing lots of games in Maidenhead, which is the other side of London to us. And I said, "Oh, do you fancy a club matchup someday?" So that might lead to something.
Good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right, so question three, where to buy models?
So
obviously not GW models from eBay.
That is one source, the most expensive source. Yes. The other way is off somebody you know, obviously, alternative miniature
companies. Or you could go to the specialist game sites, or the Warmaster Facebook pages as a specialist game Facebook page, Warmaster Facebook page. Sometimes people post stuff up
there. Yeah, they do. I mean, if you were just to put out a request saying, I want to play this arm, I want to play Lizardman, does anybody have any Lizardman stuff that I can trade or something? Maybe I've got something you want from another game system, I don't know. And then you go into the other alternative companies, which are Pendraken, Madestrom Millestrom, Callistra, Polar Fox, and Eureka. They're the five that we know of that do really good, nice stuff.
Yeah. The Callistra is probably one of the cheaper options, but it's 12 mil, which has to be borne in mind.
With going with an alternative company, I would recommend that you go, if you're going to choose to do that, go with all the models from one range. So if you're going to Callistra, don't mix and match.
No.
Go all Callistra. If you're going to go Eureka, go all Eureka.
Go Eureka for Lizardmen, if you want Lizardmen.
We can answer you individual questions over, I want that army, where do I go for it? And it's like, I can tell you. But I would stick to one company per. Yeah. Like, if you're going to go Orcs and Goblins, go Polar Fox.
So if you want to ask where to get stuff from or you need any more help, go to the Warmaster Facebook page. Warmaster Podcast Facebook page. And
give us the question and we will answer.
Okay. Somebody asked, this kind of follows up. Where do I go to discuss ideas about playing Warmaster?
Wow. There is a specialist games forum, but I don't know how active that is really. You're probably best just going on the Warmaster Facebook group and asking.
Yeah.
And it will be the same people answering, like the most prominent people in the like online community that tend to answer these things. But that's probably the best place to go.
Yeah. Or you could, again, hit a Facebook page.
But I mean, there's no negativity. I've not seen any spite or anything. Like, it's a very nice group on Facebook. It's all positive. And if you ask, like, hey, I'm a complete new player, I don't know what I'm asking, but I want this, they'll give you, you'll get answers. Okay.
Widgets. Somebody's asked, what widgets do I need? That's just basically like paraphernalia you bring to games.
I'm using at the moment a metal folding ruler, which is very nice, but you don't have to. I also use some tokens like wound markers.
Glass beads. Oh no, you do, don't you? Yeah, numbered tokens.
Yeah, because if you use dice, people tend to pick up dice and roll them. And just like these are just like Gale Force 9 wound markers, but anything would do.
Yeah, some little glass beads.
They made casualty markers like originally, which were meant to represent that. Which are meant to, like, you put down 1, 2, or 3 to represent how many wounds the unit's taken.
Oh my god, some units take like 9 and a
or
turn.
Something like that. I mean, like your own method for working it out. Right. But there's no need. Like, dice will do.
Different coloured dice. Mm-hmm.
Only thing that might be useful if you really want something is occasionally you need a laser pen for a like line of sight,
yeah,
and something to represent, to measure out flanks. So a 45-degree arc line of sight thing.
Yeah.
So those two give no arguments, like in if a unit's in line of sight, in the flank or not. And in the tournament that I ran, that was like in my like, you know, hand of like
in your kit. Tournament.
And that's how I decided. Like some, I was like, no, look it down. Clearly, the unit's in the flank.
Okay, there's one for me here. There's somebody's asking for painting tips.
Right, get it commissioned.
Pay somebody to do it for you.
Pay somebody to do it for you. Best way in life. I mean, I like painting. Okay, so me and Barry go at painting different ways. I like painting.
You go at painting.
Yeah.
I don't go.
But I find Walmart, because after painting 28mm models for ages, I find painting 10mm so easy. Because they are lovely and detailed. Like, but I've been doing things like spraying them a colour. So I... dwarves, sprayed them silver, inked them, and then just picked out some detail, and the dwarf is done. The stuff, it you would think it would take longer, it doesn't, it takes no time at all. And in fact, going into a little side thing, I'm also doing Epic at the moment, Epic 40k, that takes no time to put.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm doing that without even realising I've finished stuff.
I mean,
like,
back in the day when my eyes were good, I did paint some Epic Eldar, and I did paint some 15mm, like, Flames of War stuff. So I can't paint little stuff, it's just, I find it more annoying now.
And the thing is, that the scale of the models is that a colour and an ink does it for you. Yeah, like, and it's so, I mean, there's no skill to inking a model. You just cover it in black ink or something. And, you know, that, and but it, equally, you know, the expert painters out there can take a long time to paint stuff, and it does look fantastic. But you've got to remember, the models are small. You don't really see them that close up in a game.
You don't see them close up. Yeah. We did talk about doing a video.
Oh, yes.
But the models are so small, it really would be quite awkward to see. Because the camera would be in a fixed position and we'd have to see the whole table.
Yeah, it's not like a 28mm scale game like War Machine where you'd be able to pick up what the thing, you might be pick up what the model, the things are. That would be hard, wouldn't it?
Well, I'll look into it. Maybe something we... Maybe we could do on Vassal or something. Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. One tip I did pick up a long time ago from somebody in Selwig, which is a club in South London, is that when you're doing small miniatures, like 10 mils and stuff, spend as much time as you can on the basing, because strangely enough...
You see the base more.
You see the base more than the miniatures. So if you have good-looking bases, you can have pretty crappy-looking miniatures, yeah, and it will still be good.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like when I judge the painting... at the tournament I did, like, some of the armies I would look twice at. Actually, to be honest, the painting wasn't fantastic, but because the overall look of it was nice, that's like, it looks good on the table. But when you pick up a unit and look at it individually, you're like, it's not... They've not been very careful here, but when you put it down on the table in amongst the masses... Yeah, it looks great. I mean, that's how my Skaven are going to look, basically. Like, the way I'm going to paint my Skaven is I'm going to choose a brown spray, spray everything with brown, give some brown in. That's that done, then. Right, and then
give
just
it a pink nose.
Pick out the noses and pick out some metal bits of rusty metal. That'll be it. That'll be Skaven done.
Right, so that was the painting tips ball size, because I didn't realise it wasn't specified, but it is.
No,
specified.
It isn't. The rules say that you need to be 80 centimetres apart. Now, obviously, wargaming tables tend to be 6x4, and that works for a 2,000-point game. You could play it on a smaller table if you wanted to, as long as you are 80 centimetres apart on the setup.
Okay.
So, you could play it on a 4x4, but...
I think 4x4 would work, actually.
Yes, it would work, but I prefer 6x4.
Okay, because you like flanking.
Yes.
Okay. Right, so future events. We've got two to talk about. They're the same two we always talk about.
Well, I mean, this is going to be we're going to sound like a broken record.
Okay, right, but we'll just round them off. So there's the Triwizard Doubles coming up in April, and there's the Bug Warmaster 2 in July.
July 2nd.
Okay, so and finally, if you need to contact us, you can contact us on the Facebook page or the warmaster.podcast@googlemail.com is our email address.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anything else to talk about, Paul, or is that it for today?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we should be really proud of what we've done, Barry, in like these... We've only been at this a short while, is that we've, like... I mean, part of it is fate, as in, like, me having a common connection with one of the Saffron Walden guys, and, like, and also fate of me being reintroduced back to Warmaster the way I was back in July, so of last year. So... That, I mean, I do believe, like, I don't believe in God, but I do believe in some kind of, like, or what do you want to call, like,
I don't
like,
know.
But like coincidences is not, it's
okay,
it's
so just fate.
Like fate, yeah, I do believe in that. So, and we've created, and now that we've created these two books, and we help, you know, like the Saffron Walden guys created the rule book and we've created the army book, that is exactly what a new player, like a modern, I guess, war gamer coming into this would want.
Yeah,
is they don't want vagueness, they want clarity. And that these two books in our club, the style of players that we have in our club, attracts players, because all I, here is the two documents, go on. That is what is allowed at the moment. Yeah, and we will, well, if we change anything, it will be a long time, like, play tested in coming. Certainly for 2016, this is the two. And that is really good. So if you are lucky enough to live in this area and you want to play War Master, it's perfect. It's on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now. And four events a year, that is a good tournament scene.
Yeah, and come down and play at our club any Wednesday.
Yeah, any time you like. Yeah, like, and just put up on our club forum and you'll get a game.
Okay.
So that, as I say, like, that is a good thing. And this podcast came off Barry's idea, and the fact that it's being successful as well is fantastic. I mean, like, again, we're like, we're lucky in each other. Like, I'm a nurse, Barry's a house husband. We have shared time that is dead time. In the, like, not like I'm
in the real world.
In the real world, like, yeah. I'm saying, like, I'm either at work or I'm not on long days. Like, so we have time to do this in, like, during what is this? Wednesday, isn't it?
Wednesday afternoon.
So fantastic. It's all, and we seem to come across well in the podcast. We seem to, like, people have come and spoke to me about it. It's like, I don't listen for War Master because I don't understand it, but I like listening. Well, people, friends of mine have said that.
Okay.
I've listened to it. And it's like we seem to have a natural energy between us two. So it's all good. Yeah, like, basically, the times are exciting, and yeah, long may Skaven rule.
Okay. What I would say is that we've got, for the new people that are coming on board, I'm not sure going forward how the rules will ever be kind of corrected, if there are errors in them. Maybe it'll just be a case of house ruling, like the Saffron Walden thing.
Well,
but because in other systems they have, like, structure.
Yes.
So if something needs changing, it will be changed by the structure. I'm not sure there are any structures left for this game.
At the moment, whatever that would count as structure is that myself, Jim and Alex from Saffron Walden, the three of us, would debate something, and then if we were going to make a change, we'd have a vote, and that would.
But then it would only ever be a house rule.
But yes, between our two events.
Yeah. So
that's the thing. It's like, if, you know, you couldn't, I mean, you'd be unlikely to take this rule book to another area, another club. Like Maidenhead, for example, if we end up playing some people from Maidenhead, we'll have to say.
Well, they may approach it.
Well, let's say, like, they say, like, exactly, like, this is what we use. Like, what do you use, in a way? So
it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the game develops.
Yeah.
Because I think, hopefully it will develop.
Yeah.
But we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was War Master Podcast Episode 7 with Paul and Barry.
Thanks very much for listening.
Okay, take care.
like the heavy.